also the world's tiniest giant. Yes, I, Dr. Howell, am mightiest of the submen, the undermen, the greatest in the lowerarchy. Of course, we're inferior to normal people, we undermen, but nonetheless, of this enormous army of gimps and wimps, I, Dr. Howell, approach almost a human. Being a common member of humanity, though subhuman and a subgenius, I am almost a human.
Here comes your Titanic explosion.
Here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane.
Yes, it was a long time ago and very important.
Popular, hear me, little public? Nobody cares out there, I know, and that's the way it should be.
The story begins.
And if you started to care, we quit this dumb
through a bank of fog, he saw the looming juggernaut of the giant ship bearing down on his tiny sphere.
Are you ready? Here we go.
Old Saturn was one who devoured his sons, or so has the tale been related. Though they say he was slain, yet I fear he lives on, with his appetite still unabated. For we all are no more than a crumb in his beard, which he has neglected to swallow. When he finds it with merely a flick of his tongue, then the rest of his feast we will follow. And we owe all that lives our allegiance, our friends and our distant relations. Don't side with that part of the universe that blindly destroys its creations.
Buggering the church of the subgenius. Now we're just drifting along over the surface of that ocean.
We were sailing along on moonlight day. You could hear the voices ringing. They seem to say, you have stolen my heart.
Now science,
so don't delay.
The existence of these nine giant spiders.
Sing those old and favorite songs on moonlight day. On moonlight day.
What's next? Actually, learn to communicate with the spiders and
get them away from me.
Some of the things.
What they have to tell you, Doctor.
The answer
but, Hanush, the cosmic space spider, was a voice of rationality, reason, compassion, and high intellect.
It's a giant web of probabilities.
If all these spiders were only as nice as that one.
No one knows for sure.
Of course, Hanush didn't come from Earth, but he came from some place where there were giant spiders like itself. I don't know the sex of Hanush, or even if Hanush did have sex, but if it was the case, Hanush resembles a female more than a male spider.
Thanks for listening.
Because there are no bulging spermatophores on the end of the pedipalps, like there are on all male spiders. Nope, just tentacle-like chelicerae that could wiggle around like the antennas of certain centipedes, and they touched Yakub's face a couple times when Hanush wanted to wake him up.
That we, the doctor,
everybody needs to see the movie Spaceman.
Am I being accused of?
If you want to meet the greatest giant spider of all, a friend to humans.
This is the part where we really begin the show. Really, no kidding. Okay. Theme songs, everything.
I suppose that the main thing we should do is deal with
plainclothes. Right, plainclothes. Hold on.
Nancy Reagan praised the pocket veto of Oral Roberts and Donald Trump.
Even where I was to start life.
Meanwhile, the Marine Corps sought a scant knowledge of Al Campanis, while Alexander Haig resisted weapons sales to Vincent van Gogh. Margaret Thatcher charged policy tilts toward Michael Beaver. Ted Koppel revealed a suspicious wardrobe for James Baker, while Mikhail Gorbachev bought covert aid for safe sex.
This is yesterday's newspaper.
Boing, boing. I don't have my boinger. I don't have my beeper. What was that? Was that a real beep?
We don't have a beeper or a booper here like the late Don Joyce used to have. Boy, he really knew how to use that booper.
Modern industry and business are very much fun.
You'd be listening and it would go boom.
We inhabit a twilight world.
A world that fears the rising sun.
Wait a minute, Cody. Columbia School can afford to record their advice.
That appears true.
Everything I read, that's the way it's happening.
And the where it's happening show.
These inspirational words from the Book of Lies, chapter 10, verse than ever. The passage runs, and I quote, "If you'll be tired or depressed, if you've got that rundown feeling, remember, you're not just anybody. You're special. You, little listener, are proof that God does not exist. Yes, that's right. You are proof that there is no God."
Hello?
No, don't. First of all, when you call the show, don't pretend like anybody wants
to
hear.
It's so hard to read the tiny letter.
Remember, you're just part of the mix. You're just one of the sounds.
Yes, that's the one. This is the one.
Breaking nuts or something noise like that.
I represent a...
No. No representation.
A fatty acid gene.
This is the part where we do our own show.
What about your ID? What do you represent?
I want to be in your...
Well, doctor, some make rules, some obey, but the rules are for fools, is what I say.
That's all there is to it.
Keep your hands on the table.
When you put on the nose, it grows.
In just 6 minutes, the Earth behind us looks like a giant balloon.
Yeah, that's due to the incredible speed of the space vehicle.
Probably both.
How about your
fact? You see, it can be argued that the vehicle is not moving at all, but it does convey the traveler from one spot to another.
We'll be seeing more of this exciting action later on in our program, but now let's go back to the chief of...
With the reaction of Action Jackson.
Barry, take it away.
Take what away?
Barry, how about those clouds and mists which we've been seeing on the horizon? Is there any chance of scattered thundershowers and volcanoes later on in the evening? Good heavens, I thought Narni was a male. You say those are Narni's breasts?
A poetic expression.
Oh, of course. The breath of God, the birth of Bob. I mean, the birth of God.
Breaths. Yes. Deep breaths of good, pure air. To see the world in a grain of sand, a heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, an eternity in an hour. A robin redbreast in a cage sets all heaven in a rage. A dove house filled with doves and pigeons shudders hell through all its regions. A dog starved at his master's gate predicts the ruin of the state. A horse misused upon the road calls out to heaven for human blood. Each outcry from the wounded hare, a fiber from the brain does tear. A skylark wounded in the wing, a cherubim does cease to sing. The gamecock clipped and armed for fight does the rising sun affright. Every wolf and lion's howl raises from hell a human soul. The wild deer wandering here and there keep the human soul from care. The lamb misused breeds public strife, and yet forgives the butcher's knife. The wanton boy who kills the fly shall feel the spider's enmity. He who torments the chafer's sprite weaves a bower in endless night. The caterpillar on the leaf repeats to thee thy mother's grief. Kill not the moth nor the butterfly, for the last judgment draweth nigh. He who shall lead the horse to war shall never cross the polar bar. The beggar's dog, the widow's cat, feed them and thou wilt grow fat. The gnat that sings the summer long poison gets from slander's tongue. The poison of the snake and newt is the sweat of envy's foot. The poison of the honeybee is the artist's jealousy. The prince's robes, the beggar's rags, are toadstools on the miser's bags. A truth that's told with bad intent beats all the lies you can invent. It is right, it should be so. Man was made for joy and woe, and when this we truly know, through the world we safely go. Joy and woe are woven fine, clothing for the soul divine. Under every grief and pine is a joy with silken twine. The babe is more than swaddling bands throughout all these human lands. Tools were made and born were hands. Every farmer understands. Every tear from every eye becomes a babe in eternity. This is caught by females bright and returned to its own delight. The bleat, the bark, the bellow and roar are waves that beat on heaven's shore. The babe that weeps the rod beneath writes revenge in realms of death. He who shall teach the child to doubt, the rotting grave shall ne'er get out. He who respects the infant's faith triumphs over hell and death. The child's toys and the old man's reasons are the fruits of the two seasons. The questioner who sits so sly does not know how to reply. He who replies to words of doubt doth put the light of knowledge out. The greatest poison ever known came from Caesar's laurel crown. Naught can deform the human race like to the armorer's iron brace. When gold and gems adorn the plow, to peaceful arts shall envy bow. A riddle or the cricket's cry is to doubt a fit reply. He who doubts from what he sees will ne'er believe, do what you please. If the sun and moon should doubt, they'd immediately go out. every night and every morn, some to misery are born. Every morn and every night, some are born to sweet delight. Some are born to sweet delight, some are born to endless night. We are led to believe a lie when we see with not through the eye which was born in a night to perish in a night, while the soul slept in beams of light. God appears and God is light to those who dwell in realms of night. But does a human form display to those who dwell in realms of day?
Oh yes, I remember those people. Those people are people at those.
Peoples!
And we were supposed to have great fog.
Peapod Dobbs.
Peapod Dobbs, he was a vegetable.
Dude, that's all I have tonight.
Time to hear the laughing trombone record.
Well, thank you.
Now the subgenius religion got it started.
Now we're proud to present 14 hours of our own phone message.
Give me that subgenius religion. Give me that subgenius religion. Give me that old time subgenius. It's good enough for me. It was good enough for Ivan. It was good enough for Ivan. It was good.
Yes, it was no use. They were using a joke
enough for me. It was good enough for Philo. It was good enough.
Hitler taught us.
I think there's some show over there.
This is Paul Hart.
It was just fine for old man. It was just fine for old man.
This is Doug Harvey.
And just fine for old man. And that makes it fine for me.
We are scared in the radio jungle. There's so many stations out here.
As the faithful among you will remember, last year...
Hey, Gary, what station are we on? It's scary out here in the radio jungle.
Don't identify the station.
And hurt me to the depths of my soul.
Let me do it.
We're on the planet of the tofu bacon.
That may be, but this is Radio Valencia. And this is the Ask Dr. Hal show live on radio. You, the listener, are hearing it. And it is being podcast right this minute. At 12:17 a.m. So whenever, as well as wherever you're listening, that's my word from the horse's mouth to your ears.
The doctor's play,
E-pop.
After all, the band that dare not speak
a member of the Jackassic Society.
That's right. They aren't going the Doxology. There's several complicated things that will prevent them from, if they do get the Doxology coach, from playing a set.
Squawk. Behold, the bowel.
My guitar
helps the earth with stones.
Listen now,
I got
my name is.
There we go. We got the callers lined up. We got radio wound up. Everybody's ready to go to Doc Stock. Nobody knows
what a multi mouth show.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The book of the subgenius still available.
There's no show in here. People, the studio, and sound effects.
Incredible special effects.
Go ahead.
We're listening. I don't hear anything. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Necessary radio for better understanding.
Hey, Dad, is there really...
You got to talk louder. We can't hear you.
Well, we were going to have that talk, son, but your mother told me I should wait a few years. You know... Your mother actually saw J.R. Bob Dobbs. Did I ever tell you that? We'll be right back. somewhere in the incredible geological complexity of southern Mexico's Sierra Madre Oriental, there is, according to a persistent legend, an inaccessible valley in which strange creatures like those known anywhere else still flourish and live today. In fact, some of these, it is said, are living dinosaurs. This is the actuality of the fabled Valley of Guanji. Now, an author named David Hatcher Childress wrote a number of books about lost cities, lost valleys full of dinosaurs, living pterosaurs flying in the sky, all this stuff which he had personally seen and attested to. One thing about these books is I noticed after reading just a few sentences, they desperately needed a proofreader, which they didn't have. I never saw so many spelling and grammatical mistakes in sentence after sentence. But I kept reading because the subject matter was of some interest to me. Years later, I worked in Hollywood on a TV show on the now defunct TNN network called The Conspiracy Zone with Kevin Nealon, and we had many conspiracy theorists on to interview on our show. One of them was David Hatcher Childress, and I actually got to talk to him a little bit about how there are these hidden pockets where miraculous things exist. And in his book, he tells you how to get there, but then who has the time? Mexico is a fascinating land. Unfortunately, it will be at enmity with us because of the stupid behavior of our unfortunate oligarch and autocrat, the orange abomination. Since everything he touches turns to garbage, I am fearful for our forthcoming 4 years. But what is predictable, after all? There are always surprises. One must resort to such sophistry not to be consumed by worry and sorrow for what was a great country in its principles, a country where, according to its basic law, the Constitution, all people in it were equal in regard to legal representation and status as a citizen. And many died to preserve it. My own grandfather fought the Ku Klux Klan. My father was under fire from Nazis during the Second War. And the efforts of such people kept us more or less on that track until now, when we are at the country's greatest national crisis. It is sad indeed. It makes you want to take off to visit the Valley of Guanji, where they also have some Cenozoic survivors, not just the Mesozoic ones. It stands to reason if they have something as old as a Styracosaurus or an Allosaurus or an Ornithomimus, as they do, then why wouldn't they also have something stratigraphically younger? And younger in time. And so they do. The Hyracotherium, once called Aeohippus, or the Dawn Horse. That little thing lives there. Who knows what else might have lived there? Unfortunately, the humans who did manage to get there started a fire and did all sorts of ecological damage. One wonders what is left. And they killed Gwangi, the large blue Allosaurus that seemed to rule the roost. Of course, they weren't trying for a bad result, but every time you interfere with nature, it goes wrong. Nature should be left alone. It is the only hope for nature and the only hope for ourselves. More moralizing and preaching and speechifying here from the Ask Dr. Hal show. Studies show this is not what the audience wants. They're accustomed to a certain level of show, like this.
Well, but the problem is that nobody can see the records. Or say, nobody can answer the phone. See the callers. Give up one by one. 848-4425 trying to get on the air.
Don't call, please.
That last little caller missed getting on the air by Pronouns and Miller Micro.
At this point, it might be a good idea to describe what its purpose is.
Now, if you call
radio,
you'll hear the beginning of the next cycle. Brought to you by the Church of the Subgenius.
Subgenius Beach Party.
That's right, in spanoids and spanons, or rhodoids and rhodons.
Just like mine, hell.
After a few microlengths, or perhaps even macrolengths,
we hear
the first voice of the first fatty acid chain to float through space.
Here's the first fatty acid chain now, drifting by the station. There we go. Killed it.
I don't believe a word of it.
Okay, we're back in the station now. Well, you got to believe every word of it. In fact, you have to listen to every word. That's the hard part.
We wouldn't lie to you.
There are too many of us to lie.
If all the subgeniuses were laid end to end, they wouldn't even reach the moon.
That's right.
They wouldn't even reach the moon.
I'll be heading for the food.
That's right, and there ain't no food up there.
No, so come on back down here and call us.
Yes, that's right.
Don't believe anything I say.
Hello, little caller. What happened?
Breakfast, and you can invite yourself.
Come on, we're getting
scary music and we're answering the phone and everything this morning.
To Miller Microcycles, we will see the emergence of the Church of the Subgenius as a world power ready to control the destiny of nations.
And the Seychelles Islands.
Now. This speculation about extraterrestrial life, the biology of organisms existing on other planets, is a field of wide speculation. And has been ever since Galileo wrote his great work, or before. Galileo wrote it in the form of a dialogue, and it's very good reading. He wrote, arguing the heliocentric theory of the solar system, by which he was opposed by the Church and, more ominously, the Holy Inquisition's office. But we have indicators in our time which Galileo did not have in his own time. We are able to perform spectroscopic analysis of the most distant planets we know of. And it was only recently that planets outside our solar system were discovered at all. It was just the stars which we had to look at until we had the wonderful generation of space-based telescopes and robot probes going every which way but loose. Now, if you want to find life on distant planets, one way to do it is looking for signs of toxic chemical cleanup. Let me explain. Gases that organisms produce as they tidy up their environments could provide clear signs of life on planets orbiting other stars. All scientists need to do to find hints of alien life is to look for those gases in the atmospheres of exoplanets. In images coming from the JWST, the James Webb Space Telescope, or other observatories that are online, barring an interstellar radio broadcast, the chemistry of a remote planet is one of the more promising ways that we might be able to detect extraterrestrial life. On Earth, life produces lots of chemicals that alter the atmosphere. Plants churn out oxygen, for example, and a host of animals and plants release methane in various ways. Life elsewhere in the galaxy might do the same thing, leaving a chemical signature humans could detect from afar. But many of life's gases are also released in processes that have nothing at all to do with life. Detecting gases like that could lead to the false impression of a living planet in a faraway solar system when it's really just a sterile rock, like most of those worlds. At least one type of compound that some organisms produce to protect themselves from toxic elements, however, might prove unambiguous indications of life. These life-affirming compounds are called methylated gases. Microbes, fungi, algae, and plants are among the organisms that create the chemicals by linking the atoms of carbon and hydrogen to toxic elements like bromine or chlorine. The resulting compounds evaporate, and they sweep the deadly elements away. Yes, that's one of the things life does, and has learned to do, to protect itself. The fact that living creatures almost always have a hand in making methylated gases means, or could mean, the presence of the compounds in a planet's atmosphere is a strong sign of life of some kind. The same isn't true of oxygen and methane. Oxygen, in particular, can accumulate when a hot star warms a planet's oceans. You have a steam atmosphere, and the ultraviolet radiation from the star splits up the water into oxygen and hydrogen. But it's not what you call a friendly place. You couldn't get by there. Hydrogen is lightweight, so much of it is lost to space on small planets. What you have left is all of this oxygen, which leads to really convincing oxygen signals in this process that at no point involved life. Similarly, while living organisms produce methane in abundance, somebody open a window, life is imitated by geologic phenomena like volcanoes. Methane is not necessarily an indicator of the presence of life. At the concentrations of methylated gases typical of Earth, these gases will be hard to see in the atmospheres of distant planets, even with an instrument as powerful as that telescope. And there may be planets where the gas abundance is thousands of times that of Earth. The most productive environments for releasing methylated gases that we see here on Earth are things like estuaries and wetlands, a watery world with lots of small continents and correspondingly more coastline, could be packed with organisms cleaning away toxic chemicals with methylated gases. And one of the benefits of looking for the compounds as a sign of life is that it doesn't require that the life resembles anything like what we have on our planet. Maybe it's not DNA-based. Maybe it has other weird chemistry going on. But by assuming chlorine and bromine are likely to be toxic generally, methylated gases offer what we could call How about this? An agnostic biosignature. You see, it can tell us that something is alive on a planet, even if it's utterly alien to us. The more signs of life we know to look for, then the better our chances of recognizing life when we do encounter it. It also helps us understand what kind of telescopes we should build, what we should look for, and what the instrument requirements should be. Lots of luck getting it out of the current administration. What about planets that orbit double suns, like in Star Wars? You may remember that the planet Tatooine orbited a double star. Is that possible? Actually, it's very possible. It might generate a habitable world more easily than a single star, particularly a star too intense, too uneven in its output, a dwarf star, you know, all these other things they won't really do, but two twin stars might be a great place to look for habitable exoplanets. And many stars in the universe do come in pairs. This is a known phenomenon. And lots of these should have planets. So there could be plenty of planets, much like Earth, in binary solar systems, which young Luke Skywalker is watching as they both set. But it has been unclear whether those planets' environments would be conducive to life. And now, computer simulations are suggesting just that. Yes, in many cases, life can imitate art. Earth-like planets orbiting some configurations of binary stars might stay in stable orbits for at least a billion years. And you need time for lengthy evolution to occur. That sort of stability, it would be enough to allow life potentially to develop, provided the planets aren't too hot and cold. Hot or cold, you know, the so-called Goldilocks zone. Not too hot and not too cold. Necessary for developing life as far as we are concerned, our kind of life. So, they had these computer simulations, as I understand it, of 4,000 configurations of binary stars. And each one, they put an Earth-like planet there in orbit around it, in the simulation. And the things like the relative masses of the stars, the sizes and shapes of the stars' orbits around each other, because that would be happening, and the size of the planet's orbit around the binary pair, these were varied deliberately to widen the information the experiment might yield. And then they tracked the motion of these made-up planets for up to a billion years of simulated time to see what would happen, to see if the planets would stay in orbit over the sorts of timescales that might allow life to emerge. A planet orbiting binary stars can get kicked out of the star system due to complicated interactions between the planet and stars, but this divorce may not be final. And they might get back together. For planets with large orbits around star pairs, only about 1 in 8 were kicked out. The rest achieved stable relationships. They were able to continue orbiting for the full billion years. Of course, of those, about 1 in 10 settled in their habitable zones, the temperate region around a star where water can stay liquid. Now, of these here 4,000 simulated planets, about 500 maintained stable orbits that kept them in the habitable zones 80% of the time. Of course, this means that if there is life there, they have a horrible winter when almost everything shuts down for some of the time, while our seasons are controlled by the tilt and angle of our planet as we orbit the sun. The habitable zone spans from freezing to boiling. And after all, we could give it more slack, because there are organisms that live in jet fuel. You know, life can be pretty persistent. It doesn't have to be in that zone that suits us in particular. We can't base everything on a model of Earth-like planets without atmospheres or oceans. It's simpler to simulate, but it allows temperatures to fluctuate wildly on a planet as it orbits. An atmosphere and oceans would smooth over temperature variations fairly well. After all, they do it here. An abundance of air and water could allow a planet to maintain habitable conditions, even if it spent more of its time outside the nominal habitable zone. So, the number of potentially habitable planets will increase once we add atmospheres. I can't say yet by how much, but this wonderful simulation continues to go on, and this is the way computers ought to be used. It gives us good, rational information. Ideally, they're going to build more sophisticated models as well as extend the simulations beyond a billion years and include stellar changes that can affect conditions in a solar system as it ages, even though that's not really fair because we must calculate an unvarying solar output in order to believe that life will have a chance. Still, it would be interesting if it somehow managed to survive even despite that. And who can say? It's a timely issue. The possibility of stable, habitable planets in binary star systems. And these computer simulations I was talking about could serve as a guide for future experiments. This is an underexplored population of planets. There's no reason we can't go after them, and studies like this are presumably showing us that it's worthwhile to try. Just imagine being out there and seeing two suns rise. As long as it wasn't uncomfortably warm. To tell the truth, we humans are fragile creatures. Though, in the main, we're unfortunately too tough to be subjugated by nature.
Is it against any FCC rules for me to say that if J. Jeff Caller ever shows out at the station again, I'll kick his ass?
Let's not say bad things about that person.
Not anymore. Kill him.
Yes, Jerry Jeff, you've united the subgenius.
We shouldn't be mean to a fellow weirdo. This is always my opinion.
You don't talk about it. You don't do it this way.
Okay, all right.
That's my opinion also.
Well, as the official enforcer of the church, I was very disappointed to find myself not here when the last visitation was made, because I was looking forward into sending a gross distended projectile. Well, how you say, from here to there.
So you were looking forward to trouncing little upstart Jerry
That's
Jeff Caller.
That's true. I had brought all the
trouncing,
tools
like
an oversized fraternity paddle.
I wondered what that big metal stud
has a special meaning for me.
So all those were specialized tools to rig ourselves with Jerry Jeff Caller. Yes, and if that happens, I'm betting on the heavier member.
I tell you. There's a sickened caller. Turn this caller up.
Yes, turn the caller up and let's hear this little nasty caller.
Complain as you will.
There's no harm in distributing it there in public in a forum such as this.
No, go ahead.
I seem to hear this little voice nattering in the darkness.
Nattering nabobs of negativism.
NorCal mini-pope?
Well, I'd like to see you talking about
exactly, I suppose, the next point that must be made for those who don't
just a
call
that can be cut off at any time.
Here is that point.
And you are right now.
Blunt.
Pilot.
Yes, Gary, that was swift and skillful manipulation.
Bong cuckoo. Man, if it just wasn't so cold in here, you know, it's really making me feel I need to do something to warm myself up.
Here's the Jerry Jeff Caller theme song.
Well, actually, you know, we should probably drop that subject.
And I think...
There's no reason to anymore.
No reason that we should even have to know this person.
You are listening once again to the show.
I think I know just what to do.
So good. They'll stone you just like they said they would. They'll stone you when you're trying to go home. Then they'll stone you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. Stone you and then they'll say good luck. Yeah, but I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned.
It's the end.
Then they'll stone you and then they'll come back again.
Yeah, they'll come back again.
They'll stone you when you're riding in your car.
Every time.
They'll stone you when you're playing your guitar.
It makes it harder.
Yes, but I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned. All right.
Wait a minute, what's this? It sounds like an underwater calypso party on board the sunken hulk of the Nautilus.
Cut it out.
Floating over the ice.
Those killer whales. No. I'm too bloated with soap.
Hey,
I
what do you say
move.
We go on vacation, huh?
He has to wear four pairs.
We like calling them orcas.
Why do you have to tell them that, Doctor?
They'll pursue you under the ice and then crash through
a moving van to get me out of the way. But I wouldn't budge. That's why I'm still here.
At the mountains of madness.
They can't silence what they can't see. And this is an audio movie.
And I can't see this show. That's right.
No, it's like audio. You don't see it. You like you hear it. It's a concept.
That's the easiest part.
And set up camp. Stayed up late. Smoked a lot of frop. Stayed got up Saturday.
Smoked a lot of frop.
You know, we did a lot
frop.
Of things. We ate. Farted around. In fact, I had all
oh, oh say, can you see?
This tape to you so you can hear how funny and clever we really are.
How cool we really be.
Philo the Grape.
Philo the Grape?
You know what my mother said?
The Grape.
What'd your mother say?
People like you.
You'd be in an orphanage if it wasn't for me.
She said Philo something and Bullshot Drummond.
She said, watch out for a man named Philo.
I can't remember. She made some horrible, horrible joke about that.
She's talking about Bulldog Drummond, man.
And lately, through the tavern door, a gape.
Well, now, there was a famous Bulldog Drummond.
Came striding through the dusk, an angel shape.
So which was she talking about?
Bearing a vessel on his shoulder, and he bid me taste of it, and 'twas the grape. The grape that can, with logic absolute, the 72 jarring sects confute. The sovereign alchemist that in a trice life's leaden metal into gold transmute. The mighty Mahmud, Allah-breathing lord, that all the misbelieving and black horde of fears and sorrows that oppress the soul scatters before him with his whirlwind sword. Why be this juice the growth of God who dare blaspheme the twisted tendril as a snare? A blessing, we should use it, should we not? And if a curse, why then who set it there? I must abjure the balm of life, I must. Prompted by some after-reckoning taken on trust, or lured with hope of some diviner drink to fill the cup when crumbled into dust. Oh, threats of hell and hopes of paradise. One thing at least is certain, this life flies. One thing is certain and the rest is lies. The flower that blows today forever dies. Strange, is it not, that those before us who passed the door of darkness through, not one returns to tell us of the road which to discover we must travel too. The revelations of devout and learned who rose before us and as prophets burned are all but stories which arose from sleep. They told their comrades, and to sleep returned.
How many nights on mushrooms?
I sent my soul through the invisible, some letter of that afterlife to spell, and by, my soul returned to me, and answered, I myself am heaven and hell. Heaven but a picture of fulfilled desire, and hell, the shadow from a soul on fire.
You mean big neck?
Rolled by the sun illumined lantern round.
On the USS Caller.
Yes,
the gun directors are turning now. Okay, USS Callers. Oh, you can tell it. There's the signals.
The darkness round.
Now there's Jim. He's aiming the giant missiles at Russia.
From which so late emerged from shall so soon expire.
Well, I guess we can't.
We are no other than a moving row of magic shadow shapes that come and go. Round by the sun-illumined lantern held at midnight by the master of the show. But helpless pieces of the game he plays upon his checkerboard of nights and days. Hither or thither moves and checks and slays, then one by one back in the box he lays. The ball no question makes of yeas or noes, but here or there as strikes the player, goes. And he that threw it down into the field, he knows about it all. He knows. He knows. The moving finger writes, and having writ, moves on. Nor all your piety nor wit shall hold it back to alter half a line, nor all your tears wash out one word of it.
Are you sure that's the same stuff? We wear big heads in the Soviet Union.
And this inverted bowl they call the sky, where under, crawling, cooped, we live and die. Raise not your hands to it for help, for it as impotently moves as you and I.
Oh, how blasphemous. Blasphemous. Blasphemous.
Blast furnace.
You do not stop making fun of Jerry Jeff. People will come and burn your studio to the ground.
You suck my sailor's blessing.
Okay. Oh, your sailor's blessing.
Oh, time for the Subgenius Hour and a Half.
Tweet!
Those are insults, of course. Designate the general genius audience.
Well, sure,
the special let out religion. We made the air blue as they ripped out an oath, swearing like swears and using languages like a true
scatological joke. Actually contain coded messages of great and profound meaning.
Hello, is this the genius of salt
thought? Hold on, it's not your turn to talk yet. The song's still playing.
Okay, go ahead now. Radio in the morning,
out of normal time,
it smells like
horrifying for our host. Gary,
do you have the coloring book called Dinosaurs in Front of You?
No. Salt mine.
We can't help ourselves right now, caller. You're going to have to hang in the best you can because you have color. Let's not even talk about it. No more Jerry Jeff Caller. The guy is out of the church. We don't want to hear from him, see him, or talk about it.
He's too contemporary.
You want to talk about your parents or your ex-girlfriend or anything? Go ahead.
As all things must, there is an ending after every beginning. As Hanush the space spider said, everything in the universe has a beginning and ending, even the universe itself. And now it is time, since we come to the end of our Bobcast day on Listener Confounded Radio Valencia, that I, Dr. Howland Owl, throw in the towel until the next episode down the road. And you can believe that I will make every attempt to produce another one of these, what do you call it? Until then, I fondly wish you good night and good morning.